Tim's going to be preaching to us shortly from Ezekiel. And this morning we're in Ezekiel 38. So if you've got a Bible on your phone or with you and you want to turn to Ezekiel 38, please do so. And we're going to be starting at verse 14. Ezekiel 38, verse 14. Therefore, son of man, prophesy and say to Gog, this is what the sovereign Lord says. In that day when my people Israel are living in safety, will you not take notice of it? You will come from your place in the far north, you and many nations with you, all of them riding on horses, a great horde, a mighty army. You will advance against my people Israel like a cloud that covers the land. In days to come, Gog, I will bring you against my land, so that the nations may know me when I am proved holy through you before their eyes. This is what the sovereign Lord says. You are the one I spoke of in former days by my servants, the prophets of Israel. At that time, they prophesied for years that I would bring you against them. This is what will happen in that day. When Gog attacks the land of Israel, my hot anger will be aroused, declares the sovereign Lord. In my zeal and fiery wrath, I declare that at that time there shall be a great earthquake in the land of Israel. The fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, the beasts of the field, every creature that moves along the ground, and all the people on the face of the earth will tremble at my presence. The mountains will be overturned, the cliffs will crumble, and every wall will fall to the ground. I will summon a sword against Gog on all my mountains, declares the sovereign Lord. Every man's sword will be against his fellow. I will execute judgment on him with plague and bloodshed. I will pour down torrents of rain, hailstones and burning sulfur on him and on his troops and on the many nations with him. And so I will show my greatness and my holiness, and I will make myself known in the sight of many nations. Then they will know that I am the Lord. So we look forward to hearing from Tim now and what he has to say to us on that passage.
Well, good morning. And once again, sorry that I'm not going to be able to be with you in person today. But I hope that you're all keeping well, and I look forward to sharing this next passage of Ezekiel with you. Thank you so much for all the messages and prayers that you've offered as well. Day 8 now of self-isolation, so on the better end of it, but thank you for your patience and understanding during this particular time. Well, we get to Ezekiel 38 and 39 today, and if you've had a chance to have a read of the two chapters, it is quite a roller coaster ride now with what God wants to say to the people of Israel through the prophet Ezekiel. Now, this couple of chapters is probably something that is for the future rather than in real time, but we have to understand that prophecy is, of course, in real time, that Ezekiel speaks into a particular moment of time and history for the particular people that he's speaking to at that time. But, you know, here's what God has to say, and so we're going to look at these couple of chapters. As we travel this journey of hope with the exiled people of Israel, despite the words God has spoken, they are still in exile, and they will be for some years to come. But these particular chapters point to some future moment. This prophecy spoken into a time in history comes at a particular moment in order, I think, to give them some momentum and give momentum to the resilient faith of a frustrated, perhaps even a foolish feeling people facing the consequences of their own infidelity to God, their compromise and their carelessness. These moments must have been tinged with sadness and sorrow, the sort of what if we hadn't done that sort of moment. It seems like evil may have won the day, and there may not be a happy ending to this particular story. And yet, echoing through everything God has said was this hope, this note of hope that runs in. Hope that perhaps begins as a whisper, yet grows louder and louder, culminating in the eventual restoration of the temple and the healing of the nations, as we will see right at the end of the book of Ezekiel. God's purposes are going to be worked out. He isn't going to abandon his grand vision of salvation for the world, despite, or maybe perhaps because of, the fickle faith of his people. And so as we read these words today, we have to put ourselves into this story as well, but also understand the big story, the grander story that we know now, the New Testament story that comes into this picture now for us, the story of Jesus and the story of hope that the cross and resurrection brings to us as well. As we were reminded earlier today, today is All Hallows Eve, Halloween, the day before All Hallows Day, otherwise known as All Saints Day, when the church, whether Catholic or Eastern Orthodox or Lutheran or Anglican or Protestant, when people pause to remember the saints. That's the 1st of November. Saints, famous or obscure, people who have kept the faith, people who have persevered through the challenges, remembering those who, whatever the circumstances, trusted God, not for what they could see in that moment, but for what faith enabled them to believe in that moment as well. And as Hebrews 11:39 states for us, none of them received what had been promised, but they reached out in faith for what one day would become a reality. And so we stand in that line of people who are looking forward to the one day reality that God has promised for us. And so part of this victorious vision of Ezekiel is to equip us as well with that same confidence that God is in control. Now in Ezekiel chapter 38, God calls out this mysterious and unknown force of Gog from the land of Magog to attack the future settled people of Israel who are now living in peace and tranquility. See, this is a future event. It hasn't happened yet. But there they are in peace and tranquility, out of exile, and yet God calls in this mighty force, Gog, from the land of Magog. Now, this apocalyptic picture finds a resonance in many other passages throughout the Bible. You'll see something similar in Isaiah and definitely in Revelation chapter 20, when Gog and Magog are again mentioned in what will be the culmination of all of history. But they represent an overwhelming force of evil and destruction and violence and chaos that will overtake God's people and swamp them. Not a great vision for today, but... And here's the hope. Right into the middle of this picture is God. And as the forces of evil arrive, chapter 38 verse 18 tells us that God is going to act. He calls in Gog and Magog, but God is at the other side of that as well. Because when he acts, the enemies will see God's greatness and his holiness, and the people of Israel will know God's holy name. And the nations will know, as it says in chapter 39, verse 7, that I, the Lord, am the Holy One in Israel. See, this is the big hope in this, that despite what is happening around us, despite the destruction, the chaos and the evil and the violence that we see, God's people can hold on to the hope of a future because God has promised it to his people. Not only that we might know who God is, but that the world might know. That's what Jesus prayed. He prayed for his followers that they would know, but also the world would know through them. And so this victorious vision of God acting in the world must still ring into our hearts as well. No matter what we see happening around us, no matter the evil, the despair, the destruction, God has a vision of victory to put into the hearts of his people. So maybe today it feels a bit like despair for you, or you're concerned about all the hard stuff that's going on around the world. You don't know what to do about it or where to turn. Well, today I want to remind you of one thing we can be sure of, and I want to remind you of one thing that we're in need of at a time like this. And I think Ezekiel 38 and 39, we find echoes of this running through it, that we need to get a picture of who God is and why it matters. So this is what I want you to be sure of today. God is able. When everything seems out of control, God is able. I'm sure in many of our lives there are times when we've been crushed by disappointments, confused by what we see happening around us, concerned that nothing seems to change. And I guess we have a choice, don't we? Do we sit and accept it and watch it happen and do nothing? Or could we allow God to do more than we could imagine? Yeah, this victorious vision in Ezekiel of God's ultimate victory must not cause us to resign to complacency, to sit back, to do nothing and let it work itself out like some passive movie watcher in some cinema. This bold vision has to lead us to a deep conviction that we have a part to play in God's plans and purposes. We're part of this story. Yeah, when we start living in the light of God's power and holiness, rather than the shadow of Gog's destruction and chaos, then we can become part of the vision of hope that resonates throughout Ezekiel's words. Because God is able. In fact, he's more than able. In fact, Paul writes, God can do immeasurably more than we dare to think, dream or imagine, whatever the circumstances, whatever the challenges we face. So whether on a personal level or on a global scale, we can come before a holy God, make known our prayers and requests to him, and join him in bringing about the fulfillment of this vision. Dare we be bold enough to do that? Dare we be bold enough to pray those sorts of prayers because we know that God is able? Here in Luke chapter 11, Jesus tells a story about a person who has a friend arrive late at night and they've got nothing to give them to eat. So the host goes next door and wakes up his neighbour to ask for some bread. And Jesus comments that even though the neighbour won't get up out of friendship or neighbourly kindness, they will get up and give them bread because of the shameless audacity to ask. And Jesus says they will give as much as they need. Now Jesus tells this story just after he's taught his disciples to pray. Just after he's taught his disciples about how to get involved in seeing God's name get honoured. Just after he's taught them how to get involved in seeing God's kingdom come. Just after he has taught them to get involved in seeing evil overcome. He's saying, you know what, don't just pray these words. Keep on asking. God is able, but you need to ask. If you want to see this vision become a reality, if you want to see God's ultimate victory, if you want to see God's kingdom come, then have the shameless audacity to keep on asking, because God is able. He's not a grumpy neighbour. He just wants us to ask. And when we knock on heaven's door, it shows that we're developing the most important connection we will ever make in our lives. And the better the connection, the bigger our God, the bigger our prayers, the bigger the transformation. And we say to God, God, I'm looking to you to come through for this. And notice in the parable in Luke 11, the neighbour didn't just give the other guy who asked one loaf of bread. He gave him three. Have the shameless audacity to ask, the impudence to just ask a bit more. Yeah, the trap with prayer is that we pray what we think God can manage. And too often the size of our prayers reflect the size of the God we believe in. Now, you remember a couple of weeks ago I told you my story about the bamboo in my previous house and how I'd made it my life's mission to get rid of all this bamboo that was springing up everywhere. And the number of people who told me that I just couldn't do it, that it wasn't even worth starting, that I might as well let the bamboo win. It'll be back, impossible to get rid of. Well, that just spurred me on even more to determine that I had to do it. No one else cared about it like I do, so I was not stopping. See, I have the shameless audacity to believe that I could do it, that it will be done. I'm just going to have to get a few new forks to prove it. Because what I found was that, you know, I would start digging with a fork and then one of the prongs on the fork would bend or snap off. And what did I do? Did I give up? I just bought a new fork. And by the end of this journey of getting this bamboo out, I had 6 forks lined up in my shed. I'd kept all the bent ones as well, just to remind me that I didn't need to stop. that I could carry on. The prayers you're praying, which ones are you praying that are impossible, too hard, just won't happen? Are you praying any? I hope you damaged some forks praying those prayers. And if you've broken them all, well, just get a new one. In Luke chapter 11, verse 9 to 10, Jesus goes on to say, keep on asking, keep on seeking, keep on knocking. Don't be embarrassed by your audacity. God isn't bothered by your audacity. He's moved by it. Moved by how you approach him, how you dare to approach him with these prayers. It shows that you believe that he can make a difference, that you want his name to be honoured, that you want his kingdom to come. So let's stop praying for a parking space, shall we? And let's start praying for more. We can pray more than we can think. We can pray more than we can imagine, hope or dream we can. You know what? If we look around our world and we think this is impossible for anything to change, God is able. Because the God we believe in can do immeasurably more. You know, if you can answer the prayers that you're praying, then I think the prayers aren't big enough. If we're going to be included in seeing God's kingdom come, in making his name known to all, in seeing his victory, then we need to get involved and make it happen. I think we can do that because God is able. But here's one thing we need as well. This is only going to be possible because of God's grace. It is down to him. You know, in Ezekiel chapter 39 and verse 23 at the end of our passage for today, there's the most moving few verses here. God says the nations will know that the people of Israel went into exile for their sin because they were unfaithful to me. There's the reality of what's happened. And this is what God says. So I hid my face from them and handed them over to their enemies, and they all fell by the sword. I dealt with them according to their uncleanness and their offences, and I hid my face from them. There are some sad verses in the Bible, but perhaps that's up there with one of the saddest. I hid my face from them. And then verse 25 goes on to remind us, therefore this is what the Sovereign Lord says, I will now restore the fortunes of Jacob and will have compassion on all the people of Israel. Do you remember those two sticks that were that Ezekiel stuck together in chapter 37. And I will be zealous for my holy name. They will forget their shame and all the unfaithfulness they showed towards me when they lived in safety in their land with no one to make them afraid. When I have brought them back from the nations and have gathered them from the countries of their enemies, I will be proved holy through them in the sight of many nations. Then they will know that I am the Lord their God. For though I sent them into exile among the nations, I will gather them to their own land, not leaving any behind. And here's the note of grace. I will no longer hide my face from them, for I will pour out my spirit on the people of Israel, declares the Sovereign Lord. So here's a God who hid his face, but because of grace will no longer hide his face from them. This is a God who says in verse 25, I will now restore and will have compassion. And in verse 29 says, I will pour out my spirit, the sign of my presence, the sign that you are one of mine. See, this is how God's name will be honoured. This is how God's kingdom will come. Because of God's grace. Because God is able. You know, I was growing up, I had a great relationship with my dad. But looking back now, there's an interesting shift as I got older. You know, when I was young, I asked my dad for everything. I asked him to help me with everything. I depended on him to provide everything for me. And I didn't have any boundaries as to what I would ask, you know. When he asked me for a Christmas list, well, do you know what? You just asked, didn't you? But as I got older, I asked him for what I thought I deserved. And then, as I got older still, I asked him for what I thought he could manage. And then when I had enough to manage on my own, I stopped asking for anything. I mean, I still knew my dad was generous and fair because that's who he was, but I just stopped asking. I wonder, what do you believe about God? Is he generous? Yeah, when you know who he is, when you know him, experience him, then you will ask for immeasurably more. So what is it you want to ask him for? If you truly believe that God is able, and you know that it's only because of his grace, then what dare we ask him for? Dare we trust him that this victorious vision will come to fruition through our lives, through our life together, in our families, in our marriages, in our workplaces, in our community, in our nation, in our world? Dare we look at our world and see all that's wrong with it and despair, or dare we look and that drives us to continue to ask God to transform, to change, to ignite hope in the people we care about? What's the prayer you're going to pray to enable God to do what he does best? He is able. Maybe you're praying for someone who has walked away from faith. Or maybe you've stopped praying for them and it's time to start again. Maybe there's a colleague at work or a friend at school or college and you want to find a way to introduce them to Jesus. But you've stopped praying for opportunity. It's just too hard. God is able. He loves when you have the shameless audacity to ask. So will you play your part in this victorious vision? Pray your prayers. May this come true in our day, one life at a time, as we see God's name honoured, as we see people drawn closer to him. God is able. And because of his grace, he is willing to be able to fulfil this vision. This victorious vision is ours to take hold of now. We're called to be his people for such a time as this, as we stand up and take our place among the saints, to be God's people today and to see the fulfilment of all that we long for. In his name, amen.